Hello and hi. Welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and as everyone here knows, I am a sucker for Westerns and monster movies. And today we have a monster movie. It feels a little bit like it was filmed like a Western, but it's gory. It's deliciously full of practical special effects. I'm talking about The Prey, Legend of Carnoctis, and with me now are co-directors and all-around raconteur instigators for the creation of this movie, Matthew and Eric Hensman. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi, Summer.
Hey, Summer. Thanks for having us. We're excited to talk to you about this movie.
Like I said, I'm a sucker for a monster movie. So when I see that we have shenanigans involving large creatures, just basically causing, you know, mayhem and general destruction, I'm curious. I want to see more. And this movie is interesting and gorgeously shot. Your DP, your cinematographer, deserve all of the awards as far as I'm concerned.
Go Morgan Schmidt.
Oh, so you guys wrote this or co-wrote it?
No, my brother wrote it from a script from Gus, one of the producers, Gus Sines. He had the first draft, and then my brother took over and rewrote it from there. So I would just kind of tell my brother what I wanted in the movie, and then he would actually do the heavy lifting.
So what did you want to have to feature in this movie? What was going to make this project make you happy forever?
Oh, number one, I knew that we were going to get to make our own monster. That was really everything. I wasn't going to even make the movie. When Gus first pitched me the movie, there was no monster. It was called Lost Patrol, and it was in Vietnam, and it was a sniper. And the sniper was taking people out. And I was like, if there's no monster, you're not going to keep my attention. So then Gus says, you can change it to anything you want. And I said, okay, great. Now we got a picture. So he didn't know that my brother knew how to make monsters because he was in the special effects industry for years. So when it came down to it, it was all about we get to make our own monster. I mean, we want to make movies that have lots of monsters and you know, world building where there's fantasy involved and big elaborate sets and everything like that. But at the beginning, we knew that if we could just get some budget that we can make our own monster, that people will see that there's potential, that we can make things that, you know, people like to see. What do you think, bro?
When I was writing it, to be honest, I wanted it to be fun, of course, a kind of a throwback to the 80s style. When you're exiting the movie theater, you just feel good about yourself. But I didn't really get a attachment to it. Like, you know how you're writing something, it becomes your own baby, like you put something personal inside of it. That didn't happen to me until I put a little bit of a political edge to the main characters, Tagger and Reed. And once I did that, it really became like a baby to me that I cherished.
Nice. So just for a little bit of background, this movie takes place in Afghanistan during hostilities. There's a patrol, U.S. Army patrol, out and about who get caught up in the middle of some mercenaries executing a heist. And for the record, I also loves me some heist movies.
it's funny that you mentioned Westerns at the beginning, too, because we're working on a Western movie that's going to be next.
Oh, don't tease me.
If you like this movie, wait till you see our next one.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. You have my full and complete attention. But back to Carnoctis here. So our intrepid heroes and our intrepid anti-heroes get caught in a cave while they're stealing stuff. I'm not going to spoil too much. And they run across a thing. And that thing is supposedly Carnoctis. And I have to love Danny Trejo's Catch line, Vega don't do caves.
Yeah. We needed an excuse. We need an excuse that we're not going to have Danny that long. So maybe he's got a phobia of caves, or maybe even better, he's heard that there's a creature that lives in the caves and he warns everybody and they don't listen.
He's heard of it. He believes in it. He said, don't do no caves. Nope. Vega don't do no caves. I'm like, this, that's a foreshadowing right there. And I love it. But you mentioned you needed to make a monster. Can you talk about how the concept of Carnoctis came to be and building him? Because this is a large, nasty looking thing. It sounds like the Predator and it looks like a werewolf. And it's just nasty looking and practical effects. I'm in love.
Well, when it came to designing the monster, I got to admit, that's our jam. That's our dream. So we got together with Richard Carter, our concept artist, and he just got pencil and paper and he just started sketching. And I knew that we weren't going to just do your everyday Bigfoot Yeti creature that we've already seen, because it wouldn't be ours. We wanted to make something that is something unlike anything you've seen, so that when you see it again, you'll be like, oh, that's that one creature from The Prey, Legend of Carnoctis, so that Carnoctis could actually be its own thing. So we wanted to take the initial concept of a Bigfoot or a Yeti, but then we thought, well, since it's in Afghanistan in a cave and it lives in the dark underground, we really could make it look like anything we want, and we can do, there's no rules. Nobody can tell us what it has to look like. So we just started drawing and we just started seeing what would make a good toy. What would make a good action figure? You know, what would you want to play with if you were 5 years old and you were like trying to like, you know, kill all the soldiers, all your G.I. Joes or your action figures. And we just started drawing and, Al Medina and Calvin Primich were there and they were helping us out. And everyone just gets a pencil and paper and some crayons. And we're like, okay, draw a monster. And I remember telling my brother I wanted to do four eyes. And my brother was like, hey, man, you have to remember, we're actually having to make the monster ourselves. So don't overly complicate everything. And, my brother has the ability to paint and to sculpt and actually, you know, bring it to life. We also had the luxury of having a few friends in the industry, Lou Klein and Jeff Farley. Jeff Farley helped us do the molds and Lou Klein helped us do the bodysuit. So we did have some help when it came to like the specialist, but my brother was the one that actually sculpted it, you know, from scratch. And I was just kind of just describing what was something I would want to see that would be fun. You want to elaborate on it?
Once we all got together and kind of added the ideas and had the first drawing, then I just did a sculpture, a little maquette, so we could all look at it and see if we liked it. And throw in our 2 cents to make any changes. And then from there, we made the big bodysuit. One of the interesting things, because I hadn't made a monster in several years because I was busy being a father and raising my kids. And I had forgotten that what things look like in your eyes and what they look like on camera are different. And so our monster looked good when you're looking at it, but when you put it on camera, it looked a lot bigger, so it looked a little hokey pokey. And so that was a mistake that I had forgotten, and I had to re-sculpt the monster again, making it a lot tighter and closer, like maybe 70% the size. But it ended up working out for my benefit, because what happened was I put the new sculpt on top of the old sculpt and it made the whole head of the Carnoctis protrude out, so it didn't look more like a human in a suit. It looks like an elongated horse jaw.
Yeah, that was like one of those happy accidents where the first time we put the man inside the suit, we knew within 1 second that this wasn't going to work, because it looked like a mascot. It looked like a cartoon version of a monster, and we didn't want it to be we want it to be fun, but we don't want it to be not scary. So we had to start over. And I remember starting over and trying to figure out how we're going to do this. And then my brother had the idea, well, let's put the new one on top of the old one. And if we didn't mess up, the monster wouldn't look as good as it did, because that mess up even turned out to be a good thing. So it's just funny how in filmmaking, there's a bunch of things like that that happen.
Yeah, there are some shots where you see the monster and the glow and the lighting on it are really, it makes it look otherworldly. And you're trying to think, is this a monster? Is this a demon that got trapped? What is this thing? And it's fun to watch the people freaking out when they're engaged with this thing that, you know, spoilers, eats them. and it just, it, for me, it's a lot of fun seeing the people interacting with something tangible, and that tangible creature looks horrific in a good way. Now, I was paying attention during the end credits. One of the soldiers is actually the guy in the suit, right?
Yeah, yeah. The Ming Yu, who also plays Chen, majority of the time he played Carnoctis also. We needed somebody that was super fit, somebody that was super down for the team, because being the guy inside the monster suit is no joke. It is brutal. It is so hot.
In a cave, it in is, the summer.
It is so exhausting that we had other people try to attempt to do it. And within less than 5 minutes, they were like, sorry, get me out of here. I can't. I'm going to pass out. And I think in one day, we actually had 4 people try on the suit. My brother even had to get into the suit one time because we had to try to get these special effect shots. And people kept passing out, because it's so exhausting to try to be in that monster suit. It's like a sauna times 1,000. And, you know, the weather of where we're shooting and the temperature and the conditions are out of control to begin with. So it was brutal.
Job.
But yeah, Ming Yu, he never complained. He, you know, he would throw some water on his face and drink a lot of water and say, okay, let's do it. Let's get that shot that you guys want. And man, when we get a shot that we think works, it's like, you know, we're high as a kite. It just is such a fun thing to do.
Nice. Now, one element that I thought stood out was not only the set design, the caves itself, but the lighting in certain areas where you're deep inside this cave, all you have are the lights from the flashlights and the helmet lights from the soldiers. At some point you've got what are those things called?
The little lanterns that they have?
The glow sticks. And this, some of the way that the glow sticks were lighting up everything, like there's like one scene where they're waiting, hoping they've set a trap. And I don't know how, I'm still trying to figure out how it was done. The green glow from the glow sticks was enhanced to look like the glow was around them, and it was just so freaky and so cool looking.
Yeah, there was we had such an amazing team. Morgan Schmidt, the DP, you know, basically we would have a fish pole, and the fish pole was just a long metal pole, and at the end there would be a light bulb and like a straight up China ball, and super practical, you know, lighting. Doesn't cost a lot of money for China balls. And then we would get the green gels and we would just gel it. And then it was just a matter of how close do you get with the fish pole. So I remember Calvin Primich and Dylan Durant, they would be there like crawling on the floor, reaching in with the pole. And we'd be like, more fish pole, more fish pole. And it was like the whole more cowbell kind of thing. And it got to the point where, you know, it was a dance. It was a dance between the cameraman, the actors, their flashlights on their helmet, the flashlights on their gun, but also how close can you get with the light? Because the light has to feel that it's actually practical light that is bouncing off of the cave walls to create that glow so you could actually see them. And, you know, early on, we knew we had to have little lanterns that was on their hip. So three of the characters actually have lanterns like that they brought with them so that it was more than just their flashlights. But once you get into the movie and once you get deep into the cave, something happens to those lanterns. They get knocked down, they get beat up, and then they're stuck with just the glow sticks or just the flashlights, and you see the movie progress and evolve into a dark, darker and darker. And, you know, it gets to the point where they don't have anything and they have to light a flare and then everything turns red. So it's kind of like that whole orangish turns to blue, turns to green, and then turns to red.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of cool to see the progression color schemes that we were able to pull off with Morgan and the whole lighting crew.
Yeah, that's just the lighting itself seemed to enhance the tension or the emotions of whatever's going on. So you know, golf clap on that one. Mm-hmm. Now since you mentioned it, you opened that door. I have to ask, can you talk about this Western you're working on at all? Can you say anything about it yet?
We can't talk about it, but just the fact that you love Westerns, I wanted you to know that we're going to make one.
Awesome. Awesome. You guys have to contact me when it's ready to be talked about. Cause like I said,
well, it is a Westerns. Monster Western.
Okay. Okay. I got to be specific. Ooh. It's a monster movie that takes place in the Western setting. And the closest movie I can tell you that it's like is, it's also not too serious. It's Big Trouble in Little China. When we saw the special features and we found out that that was supposed to be a Western, we were like, okay, we're not going to try to recreate a masterpiece. So don't jump on our back. We're not trying to recreate that movie, but it's just our homage for this first movie was our homage to Predator. The next one's going to be our homage to Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, that sounds absolutely delightful.
And I mean, and you know, the creatures involved in that and, mm-hmm. you know, the style of practical effects. That's the
always
kind of stuff.
Practical effects. Everything we do.
That's the kind of stuff where it's just like, come on, man. That not only is the characters hilarious and, you know, overly confident and then getting, you know, always messing up, but just the fantasy of having that fish out of water, of him saying, oh, what the heck is going on here? And then there's more and more mm-hmm. creatures and fantasy elements that come around. That's the kind of movies that we want to see. That's the kind of 80s stuff that we love.
Oh.
So we're basically just saying, hey, we're just showing you the stuff that we love, but we're just remixing it in a way that we haven't seen before.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Movies like Big Trouble, Beastmaster, Buckaroo Banzai. Those are movies that should never be remade, but please give me more homage movies to stuff like that. And I have to mention this. The They Live t-shirt is distracting me.
Oh yeah. I just got that for him. I just got that for him for his birthday.
I'm here to kick ass and chew gum and I'm all out of gum.
Those are the kind of movies we want to make. Just something so silly. Just have fun. You walk out of a theater back in the 80s and you just felt energetic and happy. And movies, I think, are too serious and they lose their funness. And it's just, we want to take you on a wild ride, not expecting, you know, where you're going to go and throw you off. And just when you're done, you come out and you just go, ah, I had a good time. That's all we want.
There's a reason that the B-movies of the 80s have a 40-50 year shelf life.
Yes.
They're still fun to watch at 3 o'clock in the morning on whatever cable channel.
Yes,
exactly.
I always tell people those movies get better over time.
They do. Some
like
of them
line.
Some
line.
Of them do age very, very well. They do.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Well, Eric, Matt, I want to thank you so much for making this movie and sharing your time today to talk about this.
Oh, thank you,
thank
Summer.
You, Summer.
I want everybody to know they can see it on July 7th. It's going to be on all the digital platforms, video on demand, Apple TV, Amazon, Vudu, Fandango, Xbox, you name it. There's like 100 platforms now you can rent movies off of or download. And also check out the praymovie.com is where you can see everything. And you'll also be able to find the Carnoctis action figure releasing on Comic-Con this summer.
Nice, nice. We will have links to the website. And if you can't wait until it's on your digital platforms, it is available on various cable video on demand platforms right now. The movie is The Prey, Legend of Carnoctis. Eric Hensman, Matt Hensman, I want to thank you again for this movie and for your time today.
Thank you, Summer.
Thank you, Summer. We're excited to see you on the next one.
We will. We will. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. A nocturnal beast and blow his ass away. In these world illusions, you gotta get paid. Risk your life to find a way out this maze. When soldiers go to war, it only goes one way. Either you gon' be the predator or you gon' be the prey.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic, we've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families, to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
Hi, this is Barbara Crampton, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi. Ooh, scary.
And once again, The Prey, Legend of Carnoctis will be available on your favorite digital platform as of July 7th. So check it out if you enjoy fun monster movies with a fair share of mayhem. And yes, that song you heard on the out from the interview is from the movie. It's called The Prey by, I hope I'm pronouncing this guy's name right, Niasis. You can find it, or a link to it rather, from the website, thepreymovie.com. And yeah, it features Nick Chinland. He's a very familiar character actor. Everyone knows Danny Trejo. But also Adrian Paul is in here for a little bit. And the hint at the end that the story is to be continued, I want to see that. I really do. I really do. But how about you? Are you a fan of monster movies? Are you a fan of westerns? Are you a fan of heist movies? Let me know. You can call in 602-635-6976 or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can also leave a comment on the website in the discussion sections of this episode and others, or hit me up on Twitter @SliceOfSciFi. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. And if you listen on Apple or Stitcher, or are a member of Podchaser, please consider leaving us a review or a rating to help signal boost the show and our efforts here. If you are supporting our efforts, I'd like to thank you in advance, because you and your pledges, your donations, help support our efforts here and help keep all this online. So thank you very, very much. If you would like to check out ways of supporting the show, you can head on over to Patreon, patreon.com/sliceofscifi, and become a patron. That commitment, that monthly pledge, makes you eligible for perks. And those perks are books, DVDs, Blu-rays, 4Ks, items I receive here for review for Slice of Sci-Fi and Writers After Dark, which unfortunately I do not have the space to keep all of it. So, fans of the show, friends of the show, supporters of the show, get first dibs by being patrons. So head on over to Patreon, pick a tier, any tier, and become eligible for these perks and prizes. Or if you want to support the show every now and then, instead of committing to a monthly pledge through Patreon, the place to go is ko-fi.com, ko-fi.com/sliceofscifi, or paypal.me/scifisummer. You can also check out the slowly rebuilding sliceofscifi.net, which is our little affiliate shop, which will soon have curated lists of our favorite things, books, TV shows, and movies that we enjoy that you might also enjoy. And anything purchased through sliceofscifi.net, like I said, it's an affiliate shop over there. Everything kicks us back a few pennies, and every penny does indeed help. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for supporting. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.